stay there. And, it's all good, I think. So thank you so much, all of you, for coming today. This is just so exciting to see all of you interested in this topic. I, as Christina said, have spent the last 6 years working away on what happens when we construct the environment as a legal person, and then lo and behold, this year, a whole bunch of places started doing exactly that. So I'm going to give you a very brief overview of what's happened in India, particularly relating to the Ganges and Yamuna rivers in India. So to give you a sense of where they are, the Ganges River runs through from pretty much kind of the top of India, this is around where the Himalayas are, all the way through and actually passes into Bangladesh. So when we think about what the court decision was that I'm going to be talking about, keep in mind the fact that this river is not only extending beyond the state where the court ruled, but also well into another country. The Yamuna River runs kind of parallel to the Ganges River. So what happened in March was that the High Court of Uttarakhand ruled that these rivers, because they were so polluted and so sacred, were going to have the status of legal persons, and that this would be a way of addressing the pollution problem. So the state of Uttarakhand, where the High Court is basically up here. Now, I've tried to find a map that was a little bit clearer, but you can all go and Google the precise borders. But fundamentally, it's talking about the headwaters of these rivers. By creating them as legal persons, however, it captured the whole of the rivers. So almost immediately, there's a challenge between what jurisdiction did the court actually have, what parts of the river are legal persons. Does it make any sense to talk about giving legal personhood to part of the river, but not all of the river? So there were immediately some concerns around what did the court actually mean. They're sacred in the Hindu culture. That was a big part of the court's ruling, was that these two rivers are sacred to the Hindu religion, and the court acknowledged that Hindus are 50% of the Indian population. Now, of course, they're only 50%. So what happens to the other half of the Indian population and how they feel about the rivers? Are they excluded? Is this decision based purely on the idea that the religious values of one particular group within India? Now, I don't know if any of you have been following Indian politics, but Hindu nationalism is an ongoing problem in India. So immediately these judgments were seen in that light as projecting the idea that the Hindu religion was the most valuable in terms of what these rivers actually mean. And again, I'm not taking a position on whether that's good or bad, but it was certainly a controversial decision. They're sacred rivers, but they're highly polluted. So one of the reasons for this decision was that they needed better protections. They needed better ways to manage the environmental degradation. In Australia, and particularly within a policy context, there's been a history of trying to protect the best, protect the things that are the most pristine. Like, we think of things worth protecting for the environment, and it's national parks, it's iconic, kind of often pristine places. These rivers are both iconic and incredibly modified. Not so much in the upper catchment where the High Court was ruling, but certainly into the lower parts of the rivers. They are some of the most polluted rivers in the world. So this juxtaposition of being incredibly important and yet incredibly damaged already sits behind this court decision. So what actually happened? The court decided that in order to protect the status of these rivers, they would be juristic/legal persons/living entities having the status of a legal person. And I think that's a really important construction right there. The words that they use here, the blurring of those lines between what is a legal person and what is a living person. So what kind of rights are they actually creating? They said that the rivers are going to be legal minors, and they nominated particular individuals within the state government of Uttarakhand to act as guardians for the river. But, again, we don't really understand precisely what kind of rights they've created. The government bureaucrats that they nominated to speak on behalf of the rivers, those guys already have a day job. They didn't get any extra job allocation to go and speak on behalf of the river. They didn't get any extra funding, because, of course, the State High Court of Uttarakhand can't make that happen. So they now have these additional responsibilities. They are speaking, they're acting in loco parentis, so they're speaking for the rivers, but with a whole lot of other responsibilities, often conflicting responsibilities, given that it's the failing of those government organisations in the first place to protect the rivers that has led to them being in such a degraded state. So again, this reasoning was based on religion and that need to protect the rivers. Shortly after the Ganges and Yamuna case, and this one hasn't been given, haven't received such attention, there was a second ruling by this state high court in Uttarakhand that said all of nature in Uttarakhand, so the glaciers, the rivers, the streams, the meadows, the lakes, they literally listed all of the different natural objects in lots of different kinds of ways, so they're trying to be as broad as possible. All of nature in Uttarakhand is now seen as legal minors and has this status of being a legal person. They again blurred that line between legal person and living person. And again, they nominated specific individuals within the state of Uttarakhand government to act on behalf of nature. So we've got these two cases sitting there at the state level. Now, the state government of Uttarakhand responded to the first ruling. They were very concerned that, one, those rivers are really long, so the court's jurisdiction and in terms of where they could set boundaries around what that responsibility that they've now created. So they don't know where that legal person ends. And they didn't know what actions they would be responsible for. So one of the concerns of the state government was that if the river floods people, as these rivers do, is that an action that the river is taking? Does that become something that the state government is now responsible for? And if so, can then people sue them for not preventing that flood or for the damages that happened? So the state government has appealed the first decision, but not the second decision, to the Supreme Court of India. The Supreme Court has, in the interim, stayed the application of these legal rights. So the original decision is now under a bit of uncertainty. So are these rivers legal persons or not? But I think one of the really interesting questions here is, does it make sense to confer legal rights, particularly when you're talking about the rights of a living entity, a living person, and then to take them away again? Can the legal framework operate in that kind of arbitrary and slightly capricious way? We don't know the answer to that yet because the Supreme Court is yet to rule. So in terms of this question of can we sue the river, I think is a really important one. From an environmental advocate perspective, when we talk about legal rights for nature, most people think, yes, fantastic, it's a legal person, it can run its own cases, it can stand up for itself, it can get the environmental protection it deserves. But when you talk to the average person who perhaps haven't thought about it from an environmentalist perspective, almost their immediate question is, can we sue the river? So I published an article on a conversation in March, and that's one of the first comments we got. Yeah. Great, sick of this river flooding me. That to me is extraordinary. That rapid, immediate reaction is extraordinary. That changes fundamentally the way that we interact with the environment. And if that is an implication of giving the environment legal personality and legal rights, that is a major problem. Can rivers be victims of murder? So one of the things that happened right before the Supreme Court decided to stay the original case was that somebody filed a police report saying that the Ganges had been murdered. And again, we've got this kind of funny mix of is it a legal person, is it a living person? Legal personality does not mean that you can be murdered. You can't murder a corporation, but obviously you can murder a person. So as legal minors, can the rivers be murdered by people? Is that a right that they now have? But is that how we're treating them? It's entirely probable that this was mainly a publicity stunt to draw attention to the appalling state of those rivers. But the uncertainty in the original High Court ruling means that that's actually not necessarily an invalid thing to try and do. All right, and I'm going to finish up. Okay, so the state of Uttarakhand has appealed these decisions. And really, I'm just left wondering, is it valid to give legal rights, particularly when they are the same kind of rights as we confer on humans, and to take them away again? Is it valid to accord those legal rights to only part of the river, but not all of the river? And I think, yes, that's it. So I think these decisions in India give a lot of food for thought. They are really exciting because they kind of came a little bit out of nowhere. But I personally am really looking forward to the ruling of the Supreme Court to give a little bit more certainty about what these rulings actually mean. So at that point, I'll hand back over to Christine.
Yes, great. Thank you, Erin.